Sometimes things just work out. Richard and I didn't plan that, but the theme they just sang fits perfectly with the message you're about to hear. I told and continue to tell the folks, the more than 80 folks who are doing Bible in 90 days as we continue through the Old Testament, the remarkable thing about the Old Testament, as well as the entire Bible, is how you can be cruising along, listening, your eyes start to get a little heavier and heavier because it starts to begin to drone, and then all of a sudden, you hear music. Suddenly, the words that you're reading, you recognize from a song. I've been doing the Bible in 90 Days program with an audio app, listening to it on headphones as I'm running the track at the Y, and Hope, the activities director at the Y, said it's the most remarkable thing to watch you drudging along as if you're just bored to tears, and suddenly there's a spring in your step, and all of a sudden you're really running, and you're actually mouthing words, and I can figure out what psalm you're singing. It's a remarkable experience. So, it is not only the music of the Bible, but those songs inspired by biblical passages, those songs that have been written through time that suddenly also you are reminded of when you read a biblical story. Sometimes they plant themselves in the back of your head and you can't get them out of your head, so they become earworms, as the young people like to say. My friend John suggested this earworm for the passage we just heard. You may recognize it. It's been sung by Aretha Franklin as well as Bruce Springsteen and Pete Seeger through the years. If I could, I surely would stand on the rock where Moses stood. Pharaoh's army got drowned. Oh, Mary, don't you weep. Oh, Mary, don't you weep, don't mourn. Oh, Mary, don't you weep, don't mourn. Pharaoh's army got drowned. Oh, Mary, don't you weep. Can you hear it? Is it planted yet as an earworm? It will be by the end of these 10 minutes, I hope. This image of a rock that is so prevalent throughout the Bible, not only in this passage. Jesus told those who listened to him that they were building a house on solid rock. The psalmist says again and again, oh God, you are my rock. Hannah, in that emotional, deeply felt prayer, hoping for a son, talked about God as her rock. And so too, in our own lives, think of all the images of rocks we have. My friend John, whom I mentioned before and to whom I will dedicate this sermon, reminded me that his first job in high school was as a counselor around the community pool of the Ohio town where he grew up. The summer ended and the pool closed, but he wanted to keep working. He was enjoying having the gas money. So some wag in the recreation department of the city suggested, perhaps what you might help us do is clear this field. We'd like to use it as a soccer field, but it's filled with rocks. And John enthusiastically said, oh, sure, I can do that. That won't be a problem at all. And he found himself for 8 long hours picking up rocks even heavier than this. And after his back was broken and he was mightily, mightily unhappy, he quit the job after one day. If I could, I surely would stand on the rock where Jesus stood. This image of a rock is fitting for us. It reminds us of the surprises of God. It reminds us, as I told the kids, of the ways and the miraculous ways that God provides for all of us. God told Moses, strike a rock. How crazy must that have sounded to Moses? Strike a rock? What's going to happen then? And there was water. God had provided in so many ways for those Israelites, and they kept forgetting, for goodness sake. We know the story all too well, being freed from Moses on that glorious Passover. Then wandering in the desert, finding themselves hungry as could be, and suddenly God provided manna. What is this? And then they wandered farther, and their thirst grew. And their thirst got more and more. And Moses finally was tired of all the complaining, and he said, God, you've got to do something for me. And God said, strike the rock. Strike a rock for water? God, you want to consider this a little bit more? And yet, Moses did it, didn't he? We like to laugh at the image. We like to remind ourselves of how stupid and silly those Israelites might have been. But my friends, Let me suggest to you that water and thirst is the least of our grumblings these days, isn't it? And yet God has the same solution. Tired of all the discord, the strife, the contentious arguments, the polarization of America, strike that rock. If I could, I surely would stand on the rock that Moses stood and see miraculous things on the horizon. This is a story of Moses being given authority that was way beyond his understanding. And did you notice, as Dinah read the story, he took others with him. It's a story of authority. It's a story of shared responsibility. It's a story for every church in every land to remind themselves that all of us have the power to stand on that rock that Moses stood and to strike that rock and expect miracles. We're being audacious here at Ninth and Mulberry. We're asking a lot of you these days. We're asking you to increase your pledges this year in stewardship. How foolish is that? But my friends, let me suggest to you, we're striking a rock and we expect miracles. We expect miracles in all sorts of ways in our own lives. We expect miracles of renewal. We expect miracles of transformation. We expect miracles of God's love spread all around this world. We expect miracles of striking a rock when the whole world may laugh at us. Sometimes those rocks take different forms, don't they? Sometimes striking that rock brings about the most amazing results. Sometimes that striking that rock just seems plain silly. Moses, in a few pages later, if the Bible in 90 days, people may remember, got impatient himself and decided if striking the rock once did good results, then he'd do it a few more times. And we know what happened then. That's why he never saw the promised land. My friends, we're all invited to stand on the rock that Moses stood, and we're invited to strike that rock and to rely on a God who is with us. That's the end result of this story. Most stories in the Old Testament give names to places where people encounter God, of miracles. Did you notice in this story, the name of this place was named for a problem? The name of this place is alternately translated as testing and as quarreling. And the overriding answer to this passage, the end line that Dinah read, is the Lord among us or not? That, my friends, is our deepest, basest, most primal question, isn't it? Is God among us? Where is God gone? What have we done to drive God away? How can we know that God is here? And God tells us, as he told the Israelites, just strike that rock. I'm as near as a rock. I'm as near as your breath. I will never leave you. I've sent you my son. Sometimes it surprises us. Sometimes in the midst of the grumbling, the complaining, the bewilderment, the unhappiness, those rocks are there and we don't even notice them. Sometimes in good Presbyterian manner, they appear as casseroles. Roger Nishioka, who was on Columbia Seminary's staff, is now at Village Presbyterian in Kansas City, tells the story of meeting a young couple in Des Moines, Iowa. A young couple who had moved from the East Coast for a magnificent series of jobs for both of them, met at the job, and then got married. They loved Des Moines, except they knew no one. They went to a few churches, Presbyterian, because their parents were Presbyterian, but they rarely signed the attendance sheet. You see, they weren't stupid. They knew people would chase them down if they signed the attendance sheet. They were living a glorious life. They were looking forward to everything unfolding good. And then came that dreaded news from the doctor. We need you to come in for more tests. Breast cancer. She went in for a procedure, sobbing the whole way because she had no one to talk to. Her husband, in the waiting room, looked up to the heavens and said, God, if you're here, you'll talk to me today. They didn't realize that when they written down Presbyterian Church as their affiliation in admitting, that a clerk would pick up the phone and call the pastor of the church that they'd attended twice without writing it down. There's God's work. And so the minister came for a visit out of the blue and visited the husband in the waiting room, and they had an awkward but heartfelt talk. She went home, and it was determined she'd need chemotherapy. It was going to be a long process. It was an exhausting process, as many of you know from firsthand or secondhand experience. The husband had to go back to work because he hadn't worked long enough to take time off with his insurance. And so it was one morning when she was exhausted and couldn't even lift her arms. She was so tired. The doorbell rang. She answered it, and it was an unfamiliar face. It was someone carrying a casserole, and she said, "I'm from the church that you attend." And she said, "We don't attend a church." And that happened a second day and a third day and a fourth day and a fifth day. And the husband, as he got home from work, said at the end of that week, "Have you been cooking a lot?" She said, "No, those are from the church." And he said, "What church?" She said, "The one we visited twice." And then the next week, the cycle began again, except on Tuesday, the woman who came was sort of outspoken. And as she delivered the casserole in the kitchen, she said, "Honey, I don't mean to sound mean, but this house is a mess." She said, "Yes, I don't have any energy. I don't have the will to clean." And she said, "Honey, why don't you just go up and take a nap and I'll clean your house." The husband had something to say when he got home that night. "How in the world did the house get so clean?" And she said, "It's the church." And then they kept coming, those casseroles. And then one day, an elderly man showed up and he said, "I hope I've got the right house. My wife made me bring this." And as he was standing awkwardly in the front doorway, he said, "I couldn't help but tell when I rang your doorbell, your latch is broken on the front door." And she said, "I know, we don't have time to fix it." And he said, "Well, I've got a screwdriver, I'll fix it for you." And the husband noticed that too. And her answer was, "It was the church." And she beat breast cancer. And they now attend that church and are elders in that church. And they say they'll be buried from that church because they struck the rock and God delivered. Those are the miracles of our own lives. Those are the miracles we all pray for. Those are the miracles that God called for, bringing water from a rock. And those are the reasons we're all gathered together as children of God to change the world. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.